Welcome to the SPS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I am your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, my website, beardedtecheduy.com, and the Digital Learning page on the MySPS Intra Network. I'm excited to be back with you today. I've got a beautiful sunshiny day here, and it does something to my soul when I have sunshine coming through in the windows here. So it's super exciting to be here with you today. A few announcements. Make sure you're checking out the MySPS updates. There is one on Universal Availability Notice. One about Superintendent Warwick announcing his retirement after a 48-year career. Conflict of Interest Training, Promise Fellows, Winter Wellness Reminder. Make sure you go and you check all those out. If you did not read your emails, they are always going to be available there, those announcements that are available here in the district. Now, on the digital learning page itself, we have the latest blog post, which is all about digital portfolios. I love digital portfolios. It was one of the things that I felt made me stand out back in 2009 when I was applying for jobs, and they've gotten so much better since then. So we take a brief look at what is digital portfolios and a little bit of history. And then the following post is going to be about one particular tool that I absolutely love, which is Wakelet Portfolio. Other things that you can check out is we do have some Office updates. One is all about Copilot. That was another great blog post where I get into some of the details with Copilot and how it can be used. Recently I did a training with our tech coordinators here in the district, and I introduced Copilot to them. And of course, I had some fun with it, so we were telling dad jokes the whole time. It's a really awesome tool. It even prompts you with asking about dad jokes or jokes that toddlers would find funny. Again, you can find all of our blogs out on the digital learning page on MySPS or my personal website, beardedtechedguy.com. Another update that we have, I know we are into February, maybe a shorter month here for all of us, especially with February break, but that is no time to slouch on the 23 tools for 2023. If you go out to digital learning, I'll also include a link in the show notes here. You can check out the challenges. If you're a Springfield teacher, you can participate. You can get highlighted. You can win prizes. And you get badges that you can add to your seeds. Here in the district, we do seeds for teacher evaluation. And so one of your professional development seeds artifacts can be some of these badges that you earn. Because quite frankly, you're doing a lot of these things in the classroom. And so we want to give you credit for it. Also, if you happen to be listening to this podcast here in February, we have some trainings coming up almost every Wednesday in February. Some trainings on Microsoft tools, some on Microsoft adjacent tools like Wakelet, and also how to better integrate Schoology into your classroom. So check those all out. They're available on TeachPoint for Springfield teachers. Depending on attendance, we might be able to offer it one more time. As an educator, you would get paid to come to the training. And I would love you there. I love doing these trainings. It's one of the things that excites me and makes me giddy all day long. And I may even bring swag to them too. And I at least bring candy. Everybody loves candy. So for the past few episodes of the podcast here, we have talked about Power Up Your Classroom, Reimagine Learning Through Gameplay by Lindsay Blast and Kate Tolney. There's a link in the show notes that if you don't have the book and you want to follow along, you can order it. But we are taking a break from that study because I've got an excellent interview to share with you with Melissa Zeitz from Zanetti Montessori School. I think you'll be super excited. I've had Melissa on a few times now, and it's so exciting to hear about all the different things that she is doing in the classroom as a computer science teacher. And I really think you'll be inspired to hear some of these things. So we're gonna dive right into the interview right now.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Melissa Zeitz. I'm at Alfred D. Zanetti Montessori School, and I've upped to a whole lot of computer science.
Now, Melissa, you've been on a few times now, and I don't know if you've actually been on since you left Liberty and have moved to Zanetti where you are now. What have been some of the bigger changes going from K-5 to a pre-K to 8 school? Other than, of course, the pre-K 6, 7, and 8 part.
Biggest change. So I really loved the span of ages within this building and how they can connect with each other. I think that's one of my favorite components of working with all of these grades, because you can do this really amazing project with 7th and 8th graders or 6th graders. You can have them go down into their younger grades and they can show off their projects. There's a sense of pride that they have because they've completed this really cool activity, but it's also that they're showing their siblings. So then their siblings get to play the games, and then you hear, "Ooh, I can't wait till I'm in 6th grade to be able to do this." Or, "How come my brother was walking in the hallway with a spoon and an egg?" And then it creates a curiosity that happens. So I think that is one of my favorite parts about being here, is the interconnection between all of the different grade levels.
That's awesome. Being able to share that. I know with my kids, like, they go through my desk at home all the time, whether I tell them to or not. And my middle child found my Makey Makey. It was like, "Oh, what's this? Can I do anything with this?" And so then we, of course, research things. And I don't know if you've seen this Makey Makey project. It's not so much a project as something you can do with it, but you can connect it to a knife and then connect the other end to a carrot. And then when you cut the carrot, and they about fell over laughing. And so they are very much looking forward to Saturday, after we do all our house chores and all of that, to be able to take the Makey Makey and make the house scream over and over again.
I love that. So if they like that, I just tried with my 4th graders. Makey Makey just came out with a coda key. And the coda key allows for the micro bit to be connected to the Makey Makey. So it allows the programming to be a little bit on the easier side, but then you have to program the micro bit. And it uses the micro bit's accelerometer, along with the Makey Makey's ability to connect to different letters on your keyboard. So it looks like you're driving a car. So they were playing a Pong game, and they were like turning the Makey Makey coda key as if they were driving. So we're working on making wheels and having them like put the device inside it so that they can, you know, play the games with the younger students.
That's awesome. So, and it's always fun talking about projects with you about different ways that you're using some of these tools that we have in the district and that you have at your school. What is one project that you've been really excited about lately?
I have to share two, because they're at complete opposite ends of the spectrum with the kids' ages. We just received Kibo robots, okay, IBO robots. The Children's House students are loving working with them. We're doing a co-teaching model within Children's House, where we are taking their stories that they are doing within their reading time or their writing time, and we're adding it onto the Kibo, and then we're creating a story with the Kibo where they can record their voice and then add movement. In this case, we're using Cookies Week, and they're creating these interactive stories. And I just love seeing how engaged students are, but I also love seeing how engaged the teachers are within the EdTech tool that we're using, because the students are programming and they're creating stories, and they're saying that it's carrying over into their writing and into their oral language. And I think that is just the wow factor of being able to bring it into a classroom and having the classroom teacher try integrating it. And then the other lesson that I love is something that I did with my 6th graders. And we talked about how some people have tremors within their hands and how technology is always being built, you know, to help people with different types of tremors. And I said, well, could someone with a tremor do an egg and spoon read? And how could we help someone who might have a hand that does tremor to do an egg and spoon read? So what we do is we took the microbit. A microbit collect data, and they can collect it autonomously. So it just will keep going. If you use the program. And they put the microbit inside the plastic Easter egg, and we put the Easter egg on a spoon, and they had to walk with it, and it collected the X, Y, and Z axis. And it was great because when the students could analyze their graphs and be like, oh, I was shaky here because it fell, or it was taking the egg apart and hitting the stop button. And then they went and they created these STEM projects where they could put the egg in it, and then put it on the spoon, and it created a steadier placement for the egg so that they could walk. And they noticed that they had much steadier of a hand. So it was a really fun way to teach my students about data and having them understand how to read a graph and tell a story through a graph while also having them figure out a real world problem. So I think I kind of hit the spectrum where it's this awesome kindergarten one, and then this is an awesome sixth grade.
That's awesome. I like that a lot. So just so that our listeners can be clarified, because not everyone knows the Zanetti model, is Children's House considered kindergarten, or is that pre-K and K? Like, is that separate from the 1-8 part?
So Children's House is preschool, pre-K, K, mixed classrooms. But this particular lesson for Children's House was just with the kindergarten.
Now, with the Kibos, I'm going to stick on that one for a little bit. First. Now, for those who don't have access to them yet or have seen them in motion, what kind of coding are the students doing with them?
So Kibo is one of my favorite younger robot that is out there. It doesn't require any screen, and it's all wooden blocks. And on the wooden blocks are these images that might say go or turn left or forward. And there's a barcode on them. And the students will put these blocks in order, and then they will scan it. And then they will touch the robot, and it will go. But what's also great is it has little wheels that are really easy for the students to assemble, so they can assemble their robot. They can see inside to see what it looks like. And there's also sensors and lights, you know, that they can program. And it's literally like if you were building something with Lego, you just put the blocks together and then you scan it and then it runs the program. So it's very, it's actually a very Montessori friendly tool.
Very cool. Now, knowing that these are kindergartners and that you've also worked with pre-K and whatever is before pre-K, I guess, pre-KK.
Preschool.
What? Like this sounds like a really excellent tool to be able to teach coding to that grade span. Are there any other ones that you've used that have really stuck out?
I know that the district has bought BeeBots, and I think BeeBots are a great simple robot to bring into the classroom and have teachers help the students learn how to program, and they can program it to find all the different parts of a book or the life cycle of a plant. They're great robots. I think they're super easy and friendly for new teachers to use. There's not much prep work. It's the robot where the Kibo has a lot of pieces. And the other robot that I've played around with is the Coibetto. And the Coibetto is the one where it's a big block and they put the pieces on the block and then they press the button and it's like a cube moves. But out of all of the robots I've ever come in contact with, Kibo has always been my favorite. This is the first year I've ever been able to get my hands on Kibo robots in the classroom. So to me, I think I'm excited because I always saw these being the most kindergarten hands-on manipulating robot that's out there, because they can also build on it and they can build stories. So today they had cats that they made and they put them on. So it allows for more of that ELA oral conversation, supports beginning, middle, and end. And it's also one of the more researched robots that's out there. So I love Kibos. Mm-hmm. But yes, there are great other robots out there. And I think the preschool curriculum has a frog that went out to all schools.
Nice. In thinking about the Kibos, I'll make sure I say it right. I feel like I visited your classroom last year when tech came and allowed you to like demonstrate them in the classroom. Now they can do more than just left, right, forward, backwards. Like there's other things that you can add on to them, right?
Yeah. So today the students were recording a sound and then they were playing back the sound because it has the capability of recording doing three different recordings, and then they can program it to say the recording back. It has things like spin and all of that, but it also has more advanced programming blocks. So we can get into sensors. There's a distance sensor. There's a sound sensor. And there is one that's a bulb, and they can have it change colors on what they want the bulb to do. And I'm still learning myself, so I can't say all of the names of what's there. But what I like is it's going to teach input and output at a very basic level and a very easy friendly. Things are Velcro. If we want to do loops, they can like just put the two on it and scan the two, and it will know that the loop is for two. So it's just very hands-on, easy to touch. And I'm so blessed that tech came last year and explored these, because I think that is what helped me convince the teachers that this would be a great robot to bring in their classroom. And now they don't want to share.
Even of course not. Will. I think the other thing that I like about them too is with what you're describing, I can think of a kindergartner or even a pre-K student being able to advance in their coding. And it's not just I think of like the BeeBot, like it's got your directionals and that's about it.
Yeah.
So it's very limiting to go beyond that. And so that's really cool to hear that this tool does have that ability.
I will say the other robot for younger ages is the Ozobot or the Root, because the Ozobot does use markers, but I still think it's not as friendly as a Kibo, but it definitely has a place in the K-1. And same with the Root robot in first grade, where you're looking for the as much as you can screen free. And Ozobots they're small and they're round and they're just easily displaceable with the younger ages. But they can be used.
Or step-on-able. I think I just made that word up. Possibly. So let's jump to the upper grade now. So with this egg project that you were doing, did students do and record data more than once when they were first initially using it to see if the first time they did it versus like the second or third time to see if there was more tremors in their hands at all? Or was it like one thing to the next in the lessons?
No. So the first time they just put it on the egg and they would get to go walk the egg spoon race, go back to their classroom. They'd look at the data. They were like, oh, my hand was too shaky. Because they would look at the graph, so they'd go back out and they'd redo it. And they kept going until they were happy with whatever they had. And they did that for both, just when they had the egg spoon and then when they made the stabilizer spoon. And when they used the stabilizer spoon, they kept wanting to make it even more stable, especially with the opening and the taking off. So they were really analyzing their data to have a better attempt being successful.
So with the stabilizers that the students built, I'm guessing a lot of cardboard was used, straws maybe. I think of like the egg drop that I used to do in my classroom back before we had computer science and make a big mess.
So there were very, very specific criteria. You could use a cup, and the cups I gave them access to were like Dixie size cups, the really small ones. Popsicle sticks. Four rubber bands, a strip of tape, and there was something else, and I can't remember what the other material was. So they had a constraint of like, you could use these. Oh, a plastic spoon.
Nice. Now, did it get very competitive in the classroom? Because I just remember when I was in sixth grade, any sort of group activities like this, we were always, who can do it the best? And then analyze what they did and try to do it better.
There was a little bit of competitiveness within this. They were I think mine's better, but I don't know if it really was competitiveness as much as they were looking to be like, oh wait, how did she get such a steady hand? It barely moved. So I think they were more at that point analyzing other people's results and being in awe of them being more successful maybe than they were, or successful in a different way. Like they were really shaky putting the egg together, but really solid with the walking. Or, oh, that's when so-and-so ran into me and I had to do a spin. Like, and you could see it in the data and they're like, you really could see that. And I'm like, well, you got off your X, Y, and Z axis. And what's even funnier is most students didn't know what a Z axis is. And we had to really talk about that too.
I think actually that'd be really good for our listeners to understand too, is they understand X and Y because that's a lot of coordinate grid work, especially in fifth grade. But what is Z?
All right. So X and Y is, I'm hoping I'm going to explain this right. X and Y is two dimensional. So when you think of X and Y, think of a flat piece of paper. So your X is your left and your right, and your Y is your forward and back. But Z is your up and down. If it was
so, Z would be the vertical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the microbit has all of these sensors on it.
Yeah. So it uses the accelerometer and the data logging feature on microbits. I will say that this is not a lesson that I came up with on my own. I went to an amazing workshop at ISDE, and I can't think of her name now. But she's one of the heads of the microbit champions. I know she runs it, but I know she does a lot in microbits. And she presented a workshop on the egg and spoon.
That's awesome. Those are two of the extreme grade levels. What are some other projects you've done with students this year? Because I know you recently, and by recently, I mean a few months ago now, had, because we are in February, the open house with all of the computer science stuff.
So computer science night was a blast because we had a wind tunnel. And so students were creating things to see how they would flow in the wind tunnel, which was a lot of fun. My favorite area was, of course, the makey-makey section, where one of my students took a big foam piece and made it into like a paddle. And so when the paddle would touch one of the, like the left side or the right side, the kayaker on the screen would move to the left or the right. So it was this very interactive game. We had things like writing the algorithm of planting a seed, and they got to plant a seed. So we had some really fun activities. And then right now in the classroom, I'm doing one of the CS for All modules for grade 2. And we are simulating a hurricane. So the students had some materials that they could use to create a house with a solid foundation and structure. And then I got to take fans to them and I got to spill water on them. And we talked about, again, this is like another data one. We talked about how do you collect data after you run it through a simulation. So we created the model, we ran it through a simulation, and we collected data. So I'm excited to do it with another class.
Now with that lesson, are you going to have them, after collecting the data, go back and try to rebuild so it's stronger, or just because of timing of everything now that we're into February and all the fun things that come near with the end of the last 4 months of school?
They're not going to necessarily build a 3D model, but they'll go back on scratch and they'll create a model based off of their data. And they'll do it that way.
Nice. Now, you mentioned ISTE a moment ago. Are you going to be there this year? Are you presenting at all? Or
I am. I'm presenting on using the Hummingbird bits and connecting it with simple machines. My eighth graders this fall used the Hummingbird bits to create a winch. And we talked about how that works and what it is. And we were really studying about autonomous versus non and human interaction with. So if there's going to be a robot that's going to make pizza, right? Someone has to hit the button and then it can run. But someone kind of still needs to be there to make sure that this robot's going to create pizza. And we kind of started thinking about, well, what does that mean? And we then made a cardboard automata, which basically you have to spin on your own. It doesn't move on your own. And we talked about, well, how do we make that automated so that, because that will get tiring after a while. We can be more efficient with it. So then we created these winches. But then they had to create a story about the winch. Mm-hmm. And so some of them made trees, and it was like, you know, it was picking up a leaf that fell using the winch. So kind of took a life of its own, but I'm presenting on just using the Hummingbird bits to teach simple machines, but also to bring in other areas in creativity.
That's awesome, especially being able to pull in like the storytelling aspect of it too, because a lot of times when we hear of other people talking about computer science, they think of it as its own thing off on the side, when really it can be applied anywhere into any subject. And there's some really great use cases like storytelling with it too. So that's pretty awesome to hear. So is this a poster session, or is this a interactive playground, or what kind of session is it?
This is a hands-on session. They have to register to attend it. And Sarah from BirdBrain will be helping me run it.
And by helping you, I'm assuming she's also bringing all the hummingbirds too, because I don't know if you want to fly to Denver with
Nope.
Enough hummingbirds.
She's bringing them. That's all her. She's bringing them. But the other, I want to say the other very big influence on my entire curriculum this year was I went to the National Air and Space Museum for 2 weeks over the summer, and I'm going back there for another 2 weeks. And it's really helped. It's the Teacher Innovation Institute. Mm-hmm. And it's really helped me to figure out how to bring STEM into computer science and how to bring phenomenons and real world things within the computer science. So it's not just about the computer science skill, but now every one of my lessons, I try to ask some type of phenomenon question. The egg and spoon, I had them analyze a graph of someone with Parkinson's. There are just other classes I try to put in one something that happened in the real world to connect with it. And I think it's made a huge difference on how I see my lessons and how I can merge both of those fields. And I highly recommend that program to anyone.
Awesome. We got time for a couple more questions here. Now that we're into February, school year, like I mentioned a moment ago, as there's about 4 months or so left, what are some projects you're looking forward to doing? Because I know with a school as large as the one that you're in, you get to rotate around to different classrooms a lot.
It is unknown. I think because I am really changing up my curriculum, I can't honestly say right now what I'm looking forward to because I'm so deep into what I'm doing. And right now that's where I am in the cycle. I'm excited to continue working with my fourth graders with the Makey Makey and the Coda Key, which is this new platform, and pushing that boundaries a little bit with it. But with my other classrooms right now, we're kind of in it. My first graders are creating their digital books that we do every year. I'm really excited to see where a couple of the classes that I'm working with for Children's House are going to go with the Kibos and kind of go down that road. And I'm excited to do some more work with sixth grade using the micro bits and the hummingbird bits. But I'm not sure there's one project that I'm like super excited about yet because I'm kind of vacation's coming. So I'm finishing all of the projects now. And then over the vacation, I'm going to start thinking about the projects next. But what I am looking forward to is Zanetti Reads. We do Zanetti Reads because that's what we called it last year. And I'm on that committee and I'm excited to take whatever literature we decide and figure out how to do lessons on it. And now that I said that, in sixth grade, I want to have students look at the sound waves of their name using Audacity and do something with it. But the do something with it, I have not quite figured out. So anybody out there that's listening wants to help me computer science their sound wave names, let me know. Because I know I want to do something, but I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Well, before we go, last question is, you're very busy and you can definitely tell that you're very passionate about what you do. And I imagine that you spend a lot of time even outside of school thinking about it. What are some things that you do to take care of yourself?
I think there are a couple of things that I do. First of all, I love to travel. That's my big thing. Going away, escaping, seeing something new, learning something new. I think that's really big for me, but also dancing. I love to do West Coast swing and line dance and going to a gym. Those are about the three things that I do. And being with friends and family. Those are how I wind down. Not going to lie, though, sometimes sitting on a couch and watching that good old show is a great way to relax when you're busy.
What's the good old show?
Oh, who knows? It depends on the day of the week. You know, it could be Law and Order SVU, and then it could be some like rerun of West Wing or something. I don't know. It could be anything. I'm all over the spectrum.
Awesome. If people want to reach out to you, where can they find you? Where is some of your work displayed? How can people get a hold of you?
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn, and all of it's under Whispering EdTech. And I try to share out whatever I can. I'm someone who, if I learn it, I want to share it. If it's a cool lesson, I want to give it to you. I want to help you do it. You can always just email me anything. I'm happy to help you in any way bring computer science into your classroom.
Awesome. Well, thanks for talking again, Melissa. I know it's Friday afternoon here.
It is not Friday. Isn't it Thursday?
It is Thursday afternoon here. Apparently, I'm already thinking about tomorrow and trying to stress you out now. You're thinking about a whole other day. But thanks for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your day. I know you have dismissal duty, I believe. I think your school gets out around this time. So, or maybe you have a class. I don't know.
We get out at 2:50, but thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
thank you again, Melissa, for chatting. It's always great to chat with you and to hear about all the great things that are going on in your classroom over there at Zanetti in regards to computer science. There's so many exciting things to especially see going from pre-K all the way up to eighth grade, all the different types of projects you get to do, and how following through with some of the curriculum, some exciting things that are coming up for your students. I'm always very thankful to hear from you. And again, listeners, any of the stuff that she talked about that you're curious to learn more about, there are links in the show notes. I also included her Twitter and Instagram handles in there so that you can message her if you've got any questions or if you have an idea for something to do with digital voices in Audacity. So thank you again for spending some time with me here at the SPS Digital Learning Hour. Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you liked this episode, please make sure that you go over and leave us a review. It's always good to get reviews. That's how we get up the board. I love sharing about all the things that are happening here in Springfield. And the only way that that gets shared out is once we post the episodes, if you go out and you download and you listen to them, it goes up the charts. And if we go up the charts, more people hear us. And if more people hear us, then we get to celebrate all of the awesomeness that is here in Springfield Public Schools here in Massachusetts. The teachers that I work with every day are awesome, and I try to get them on as much as I can and as much as they can because, well, teachers are busy. There's a lot of things going on, and I know that we're getting into test season soon. So I'm going to try to get as many interviews in as I can. Next episode, we're going to jump back into Power Up Your Classroom. I am super excited to share the things and my thoughts from it. If you don't have the book, in the show notes, there is a direct link there. It is an Amazon affiliate link, so I actually can get some credit for it if you choose to buy the book. Make sure that you are subscribed so you get the latest updates here on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, although I think Stitcher is no longer with us. Rest in peace, Stitcher. Or wherever you happen to listen to the podcast, I try to make sure that we are available everywhere. And if you subscribe and you leave us a rating or a review, however that website works, it helps us, again, spread the word. And that's what I want to do here is spread the word on how awesome Springfield teachers are. Maybe I'll even try to get some principals on some of these episodes so that they can help promote their schools. Because, well, there's turnover in schools every year, and why not hear why you should go work at this any particular school here in Springfield? We have 70 amazing schools, and I think we can find a place for you if you are interested in education in Springfield. Thanks again for listening. I'm Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SPS Digital Learning Hour.